Hey folks, welcome back. This is Mark Jackson, and bringing another module here in the Know Your ARV system. And this is all about sales comparison approach. Now that's a funky little word. Probably a lot of you are familiar with it, maybe some are not, and that's okay. But it's one of those concepts that you'll find as you read any appraisal report regarding the property that you're looking at, whether you've talked with a prior seller that has a copy of the appraisal report. Maybe you've got a person that actually lives in the property right now, and you're maybe doing a subject to deal, and you want to get a feel for as much information about the house as possible. You ask them, do they have their most recent copy of their appraisal, and they may send it to you. It's going to have a section on there that talks about the sales comparison approach. Now, the sales comparison approach, by definition, is nothing more than a means to take other sales in the market area around the subject property and use it as a tool to determine our actual value. We basically learn over time that, you know, the concept of a sales price is really just what two people are willing to come up with and say, this is what I'm willing to pay, and then a person says, well, this is what I'm willing to accept. And therefore, a sales contract is established, the price is established, and then that sale becomes permanent once the title actually transfers and funds are exchanged. So, in any particular market area, you could easily have a range of sales based on what two parties determine is going to be the sales price. And that's why it's important for us to be able to analyze the data about the sales that are taking place in a market area to tell, you know, are they at average, are they above average, are they below average, because those different characteristics will determine how we best position ourselves to acquire a property and also determine the after repair value. So understanding sales comparison approach and the comparable sales that are in your market area is forever going to be vitally tied to your success in real estate. So I wanted to create this module to give you all an opportunity to have a good solid piece of information that talks about this concept, as well as touch on some of the different aspects of how we make adjustments when we need to regarding the sales comparison approach. So let me kind of, I want to give you, you know, just some more basics here, just thought process, because these things, again, from my background that I'm sharing with you and want to be able to definitively, you know, kind of wrap into what you're doing, not changing how you do business. My goal has never been to tell you that you need to shift from wholesaling to rehabbing and from rehabbing to short sales, or that, hey man, probates is the best way to do business. That's not what we're trying to do here. Our goal definitively is to make sure that you can maximize your acquisition and position and your overall profit when you sell in the deals that you're currently doing, those that are in your portfolio, and so, and teach you how to move forward and know how to do that on your own. That's really what this course is all about. So using the sales comparison approach, I want you to understand there are some definitive strengths that are part of using the sales comparison approach to ascertain the value of a piece of property. And the sales comparison approach is, I guess the main thing, all right, it's a direct application, okay, of this principle that we have a house in a market, a house, shopping center, apartment complex, duplex, quadruplex. You've got your component that is your subject property. And definitively, we are able to take a direct application of the other sales that are taking place in around the subject property's immediate proximity. Now, there's two good things we're going to do. One is that we're only going to go back so far as those sales are concerned, typically on residential, no more than a year, on commercial, no more than 2.5 years, okay? Which basically means, you know, one of the strengths also of the sales comparison approach is it's pretty simple. We're not having to get into a real big challenge in terms of where we're going to get our data from to do our comparison. There's typically going to be data right in immediate proximity of a subject property, so that makes it really pretty much a simple approach. You know, at least that component of that, we just grab what's there. Now, hopefully, there's data. That there's been transactions taking place and of a positive nature if there have been. If there haven't been transactions, that's also another sign. That's just refers back to churn rate, and you want to be able to monitor that as you do your investing. Okay? I guess one other thing, it makes use of observable market data, is what the sales comparison approach does. Definitively observable market data. We're able to take look at what the sales price is on our data when it sold, okay? What was the size and nature of the property, of the subject property versus that of the comparable property, all right? Very definitive, observable market information that we can use. Now, what's even better and what one of the significant strengths of the sales comparison approach is that it is widely applicable. Widely applicable. Got to slow down sometimes. But here's a situation where you can use a sales comparison approach from New York to North Dakota to Seattle back to Oklahoma City. It is very, very widely applicable. And we're able to use it over and over and over again in our different projects as far as marketing and selling of our real estate deals. And in particular, the acquisition of them, because that's where Know Your ARV really puts you in a situation where you could be successful, because we spend a lot of time looking at and getting to understand what that after repair value is, which is going to drive us towards our acquisition value. We want to buy right. All right. So now there are some limitations to the sales comparison approach, and you know, to some degree, I want to share a little bit about that with you. You know, sales comparison approach, it basically has, I guess I'm going to say, some important limitations. Yeah, you could say the conclusions that you derive from the sales comparison approach could be considered reliable only if the data is good. Okay, so if we've got a challenge with the information that we have, it could throw us off, and that is a limitation. I mean, if the recent sales, okay, of the properties offer, you know, substantially different data from the subject property, that can be a challenge. If, in fact, it wasn't recorded correctly in terms of the actual sales dates and sales prices, that's, you know, human error, and it is a limitation, okay? Properties with unique features or special features do take, or basically often can't be, how am I going to say this? I'm trying to keep it simple. They can't be valued with just the basic of the sales comparison approach. We do have to get into the concept of making adjustments, all right? And in some cases, substantial adjustments. You know, I guess I'm talking about the concept of the limitations with some pain, but my goal is to stress the importance of having your eyes open in terms of being able to see the limitations that do exist. We don't want to, at any point in time, let's say, pull the wool over our own eyes, per se, okay? So that's the main thing. Comparables, let's see. I guess the next thing I want to go into is, you know, how do you look at the comparables of competitive properties, all right? You know, for valuation purposes, a property used as a comparable should be competitive with the subject property. That pretty much is a given. You know, you look at it, you know, each potential comparable property should be similar to the subject property, you know, in important features in terms of room counts, things of that nature, design appeal. Excuse me, let me take a little sip here. Pardon me just a moment. We definitely should be in a situation where they have a certain amount of similarity and market appeal. You know, this is, again, one of the strengths and widely applicable components of using a sales comparison approach, all right? Properties that don't appeal, that do not have the same appeal in the market population basically should not be considered as a comparable. You're not going to take in a population of comps in your market area. Your subject is a ranch, and you've got 5, 6, 7 different comps. Two of them are two-story homes. Well, immediately those two-story homes get kicked out of the loop, and you go back down to the first 5 you have and use those. So we are talking about a certain amount of analysis. If we had a ranch and only sales around it were two-story homes, I can easily teach you or show you how to adjust for the design appeal of a two-story house versus a ranch. The nice part about it is that the the ranch, while having a higher cost approach, has less market appeal than a two-story. The reason the two-story has more market appeal is because you're actually able to get twice the square footage on the same footprint. Understand, ranch properties are very, very beautiful. They are easy to get around. You talk about one story. You don't have to go up and down steps, things of that nature. But when it all comes down to it, in terms of, you know, how we think about things here in the United States and do valuations of properties, two-story homes have significantly more value, primarily because they can have as much square footage as a ranch with half the space. You could have a 2,600 square foot ranch, then have a two-story house that essentially only takes up a 1,300 square foot footprint. Very, very different in terms of cost, in terms when it comes time to build. Much, much, much bigger roof when it comes down to looking at that property and the amount of area that it covers when you're talking about doing a ranch. And then if you've got the same thing with a two-story house, your cost just to go up, much, much smaller roof area, doesn't cost nearly as much to work with that property in terms of doing some type of analysis and being able to evaluate it. So the two-story is typically going to have, and when you're using the sales comparison approach, more value than the single-family property, okay? Not, you know, drastically different, but there is a preference across the board, okay? Sticking with the sales comparison approach, one of the things we have to look at is what features must be similar for properties and neighborhoods to be considered comparable, okay? Individual properties, you know, they do have features that are important to the basic market population that regard them as significant. It's just that simple, okay? If you've got neighborhoods that have a certain amount of aesthetic desirable components that are going to drive buyers to come in there, we're not going to shift away from those components when we're looking at the comparables. If we've got a nice two-story property that is consistently built throughout the neighborhood, okay, the last thing we're going to do is go grab another property that's more of a split-level, split-foyer design with some other, they'll say, rather than traditional building components, maybe some type of contemporary building components to it. And that's not the comp we're going to use. We're going to stick with what is readily identifiable as popular and important in regards to design appeal of the subject property for the purpose and use of the sales comparison approach. Now, you know, research and selection of the sales comparison has gotten much, much easier in today's market. I did talk about extensively, you know, where do you find your comps, okay? I wrote about it and I talked about it substantially, but today we're fortunate that there is, you know, a good access to comparable sales pretty much at our fingertips on the internet. There's a variety of different ways to gain access to it, whether it's going to be the county sites that you're going to that list their own public information. In some cases, you can use those free sites that are out there on the internet. To both degree, obviously, there's a substantial amount of work. Neither one of those sites typically is going to provide you with or let you look up comparable sales. They'll probably provide a list, in some cases, a software of different counties of properties that basically have sold in the market area around the subject property, but then it's up to you to pull up each one of those properties, look at the different components of them, look at when they actually sold, because they're not going to be any type of order. They're just going to have a sales price, or not even that, they're just going to be the houses that are in and around the subject property and have recently sold, okay? If you do go to a free site, typically what's going to happen there is that you're going to get some public data that's populated, but the main purpose of those free sites, they're in the marketing business. They're there to sell ads. They're there to make a profit, not so much on the valuation data, but because they're giving the valuation data free, but to drive traffic to that site, to monetize, pay-per-click, and all these other strategies that internet companies do, as well as business people, to monetize and make an income. All right, it's not about providing you with the most reliable and analytical information about the subject property and or potentially the comparable sales. Okay, so that's one other area. There's one or two, three other areas that are pretty good. There are a couple firms out there. One in particular is First American. They provide their product called RealQuest that you can get one or two counties at a time, and then pay per report, that type of thing. There's another really, really good one out there called Investor Comps Online, and I'm going to reserve my bias as to why it's so powerful for the purposes of this recording. But again, the main thing is that we definitely want to know that we have to research ourselves, and there's a number of different places for us to go out and get information. But as we do that and we do the research, we want to make sure that we definitively identify the potential comparable sales properties in our report or in the data that comes back. We want to pick out the ones that are going to be most similar to and design appeal of the subject property. Okay? We don't necessarily have to inspect the property, but we definitely can get familiar with the neighborhood by using some of our map material, as well as reading those maps to determine where the commercial areas are, where the schools are, where the industrial areas are, what are different things that are going to impact our subject property and most likely the comparable sales as well. One thing that you want to be cognizant of is in some market areas, in particular, let's say a nice gated, not so much a gated community, but a country club community, the concept that our subject property is on a lake lot while the comparables are not, certainly requires, one, there's a difference in the two because the land value is going to be more, okay, and position and neighborhood, but we want to make sure that we are able to make the proper adjustments for the ones that are not on the lake or not on the golf course, if in fact we have either of the two conditions, okay? So that's important as well. The other things we want to do is as we look at our comparables, we want to, I talked a little bit about in the basics, talking about highest and best use. So we want to make sure we analyze the highest and best use of each potential comparable so that we know that if something changes with that comparable or something changes with the subject property, we haven't used data that doesn't allow us a full analysis. Okay? Very important that we're familiar with the highest and best use. And one thing that happens too is, you know, data varies. It does. The data comes back on your comparable sales basically is going to eliminate a couple of the sales themselves, so that you're kind of brought back down to looking at just two or three, maybe four different comparable sales to start making your analysis. If in fact you're not going to make adjustments for those things first. Sometimes you can start to make adjustments in your head once you've done this a long time. Otherwise, there's times where you just have to go with, the data that's right there. Eliminate two or three comps. Stick with the two or three that are going to be very, very best in terms of matching up the subject property. So eliminate data that doesn't really come in very, very tight with the subject property. Okay. And then analyze, if you have to, the differences between the subject property and the comparables, because you may only have three comps. All of them are dissimilar to the subject property in a number of different ways, but then that's the data we got, so we got to go with it. Confirm that it's accurate, and then be prepared to, as I show you, make adjustments for the differences between the subject properties. Okay? Once you've basically broken down, you've got your comparable sales, the ones that you want to use, and you've gotten the main thing squared away. You know when they sold, and you know how much they sold for. You know exactly what the square footage is, the room counts, okay, and the just the different amenities about the property. If it's on a porch, if it's on a septic tank, does it have a sewer system? All the different things that are basically the components that make the subject property and the comparables match up very, very nicely. Okay, then we want to look at who were the buyers and sellers. Let's look at that comparable sales data and see who our seller was and who our buyer was. And predominantly what we'd like to see for the purpose of establishing just a solid ARV is that we have a house that's sold, and John Adams sold that house, then we want to make sure that Sally Brown is the buyer. Two individuals actually completing a transaction of property, so that one of the parties can move forward and another party can actually take possession of the house. Now, when you pull up that information on that comparable sale and you see Deutsche Bank sold to Walt Stevens LLC, that's a little bit different animal, all right? And we want to make sure that we understand what took place in that transaction. More than likely, that's a bank selling its property on REO, or certainly some type of below market sale. When we're starting to or trying to establish our ARV, for all intents and purposes, we're going to, if there's not a bunch of REO sales in the market area, we're still going to take that one, put it off to the side, go with our higher market and sales that are full arm's length transactions, okay, between two people, and that's where we're going to drive our after repair value to. Without a doubt, we are going to mention to our seller that there's other activity in the market area that would, you know, basically hurt their opportunities to complete a transaction with us, unless they are willing to take some concessions on the acquisition price, all right? But that's the type of information that you want to have at your disposal before you get ready to go on the phone with or go see a potential seller. Let that comparable data, you know, eliminate a lot of what they may be hiding behind. Let it eliminate any pride that they may still have for being in the situation they're in. Definitely don't hesitate to use the data that you acquire to negotiate very, very sternly, very, very hardly with your seller, okay? That's one of the benefits of having comparable sales data and researching it before you ever pick up the phone, okay? Very, very important, very important component there. If let's say you've got your comparable sales data, you've looked at your comparables, you know or have a good ballpark idea where you are in terms of acquisition, you have a real good idea of where you want to be in terms of the overall position as far as ARV, then now it's we're starting to smell money, so we want to go out and look at that subject property, okay, and make sure that the data that is being provided about the subject and even the interview that we had with the homeowner matches up consistently with the information that's on the tax rolls that we pulled in our property report, as well as what's going on with the comparable sales. We want to be certain that those comparable sales are what they said they were on the data sheet. So we smell money, we're going out, we've got a person that's willing to pretty much accept the offer, we're going to negotiate, and now it's time for us to go see this puppy. However, what's really, really cool now, and I really highly recommend using this tool, is Google Maps has just added a traffic feature, okay? And essentially what that means is that they have tens of thousands of millions of folks out there in webcams driving in cars so that you can upload the street view of your subject and your comparable sale. So now, if you've never had access to MLS whatsoever, and you've got a property that you want to pull on, I always say 123 Main Street, Tampa, Florida, okay? You can actually go to Google, hit 123 Main Street, and hit traffic map, and basically drive at street level right down the boulevard, okay? I think that is just a phenomenal, really, really cool feature because it lets us pull up our subject property and take a peek at it. Look at it. See if it's the same picture that's listed on the REO sale or in the flyer that may be on MLS if you have access to it. Go look at the original subject property image. In a lot of cases, Google just has done some extensive work to get all these different physical front-end pictures of homes available when it's driving down streets. Okay. The other thing that we want to do as part of this is know that we've basically noted any differences in the subject property compared to the comparables. Now that we're looking at the maps online, looking at pictures of property, if anything doesn't match up, then we want to make sure that we correct that information based on the data that we've pulled about the subject property. Okay? From there, again, we smell money, we've looked at them on a map, and now we're ready to go get in the car. Okay? You're going to have to perform some type of modest inspection of that subject property. And again, it could be in varying varying conditions, all right? Whether it's very, very good, whether it's average, whether it's poor, whether it needs rehab, whether it needs to be torn down, okay? You are accountable for doing some type of inspection of that property while you're out in the field. Finally, now to negotiate your contract, because prior to this, you weren't going to leave the house, and I don't want you to. But you stay home, let the data tell you what's going on until you get someone that says they're ready to sign on a dotted line, or they're going to send you in the mail some type of deposit or whatever, then I wouldn't mess with it, okay? So good stuff there. There's this other concept and idea of verification of the data, okay? And there's a number of different ways you can do this. Particularly, you can pick up the phone, call a municipality and say, hey, I need information on some comparable sales I'm using. Can you confirm for me that these sales actually took place? And typically, the courthouse, as long as you have good information, you've actually pulled, got the parcel ID, things of that nature, and you can provide it to them, then they will go ahead and confirm a prior sale for you. So that's really not that much of a challenge. But now you're out, you're looking at that property, and you're coming up with anything that you could possibly can to verify or discount the information that you got from your comparables. And at no point do we accept that this information is good, that it's true, that we just don't take that for granted because it can come back to bite us. And I don't ever want you to be in that situation. Sales comparison approach is just a unique, very distinctive way to, over a wide application of properties, have one methodology to value properties, both from your concept of acquisition value and from your actual repair value. If and when you do have to make adjustments, okay, for the sales comparison approach from the subject property, essentially what you want to do is make sure that of the comparables, you pick the ones that have pretty much all the same features except for one, look at how much they sold for, and then the difference between the sales price is what that one component might be valued at. I don't say is valued at, but I would say might be valued at. So using the sales comparison approach consistently allows you to make analysis not just of, you know, a one-way transaction in terms of, okay, here's the information, this is what it says, I'm done. It allows you to delve into the information very, very deeply, okay? Make an analysis of where I need to position myself if I have a four-bedroom, three-bath, and this one is a four-bedroom, two-and-a-half-bath, all right? Always, 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 you have the ability to look at the data, make adjustments to drive into what's going to be your actual repair value, and subsequently negotiate with a seller on what's going to be your acquisition value. And do it quickly, okay, for maximum profit when you buy. And I say that because you make your money not when you go to the closing table, you make your money when you put that puppy in your portfolio. So we're going to continue on. We've got a several other modules here that you'll be able to listen to and gain information from as I talk about and develop these concepts of valuation. But I really wanted to give you some real solid basics on how appraisers garner their education and knowledge and how they apply it, because it's going to serve you very, very well in your investment business. I will catch you on the other side. Thanks for listening to this module of Know Your ARV.